Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me in studio, I'm very excited, is author and therapist Ross Rosenberg, who first got me, I would say, informed and educated about the dance that we do with narcissists. And, you know, codependents and narcissists, I hate to label, but it's really amazing if you look at the relationships out there, Ross, welcome to the studio, that there are so many partnerships that have this dynamic, aren't there?
Yeah, it's funny. Ever since I wrote the book and the concepts of the human magnet syndrome really solidified in my mind, I see the world now as interacting pairs of people, mm-hmm. people that fit together, like, as I say in the book, magnets. You know, the plus pole of a magnet always fits with the negative pole.
Right. And what is the dance? Explain for those who haven't read The Human Magnet Syndrome, the two personalities that just go whomp and it does not go well.
Well, I mean, even before I came up with the title of The Human Magnet Syndrome, I started to understand in my own life through my own therapy, my own journey, is that there is a reason why certain people always fall in love with another type of person. And why did I always fall in love with the harmful, what I would find out, narcissistic woman? And I took a deep, honest look at myself, and I realized it's something about me. In most therapy, and up to that point, you know, it was always blaming the other person.
Right. There's something wrong with them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And yeah. As long as you keep blaming the other person, then you're a perpetual victim. Mm-hmm. But yet, people like myself kept making the same mistake. And then it hit me that there's a personality trait that matches up. So the giving person, the altruistic person, the patient person, the selfless, sometimes invisible person who I call codependent, mm-hmm. they perfectly fit and feel comfortable with a person who is the opposite and who is selfish, self-centered, entitled, grandiose, super charming, with mm-hmm. high expectations. So if you think of a dance couple, the person who leads the dance needs a person who follows. And when the two are perfectly matched, the dance explodes. Mm-hmm. And that's what the human magnet syndrome is about, and that's what the dance is a perfect match, dysfunctional match, of the low self-esteemed codependent giver and the grandiose, entitled,
narcissistic guy. Or I shouldn't say guy, because sometimes it's a woman, like you say. You were the codependent with the narcissistic women. And, you know, I've always been like, I'm the fixer. I want to go fix them. So if we just have our toolbox and our big hearts, then mm-hmm. we can go hug them right. We can love them straight. You know what I mean? We can just love them into perfection. And so many people, and I know a lot of women and men who feel this way, that if you just love them enough, you can fix that part. But the narcissistic dance, I mean, they need someone to feed that ego all the time.
Right.
And they say everything that they can and should to keep that codependent in line, right? I mean, they almost feed them breadcrumbs along the way. And then what happens? How do they switch? Explain that.
Well, before I answer that question, I have a slight different variation of the situation. I don't mm-hmm. see the codependents as the victims who are perpetually being fooled.
They're getting fed as well.
Well, they're being fed, but mm-hmm. the feeding is actually mutual. Mm-hmm. The narcissist is able to manipulate codependents because the codependents have been raised in an environment where all they know is their self-worth is by virtue of what they do and how well they do things for others and how well they make people happy. Mm-hmm. And so the self-esteem they have, which is not much,
is based on doing stuff for others.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I call that a relationship template.
Yeah.
So if you grow up with this belief that you're only good when you take care of someone, then you meet a narcissist mm-hmm. who believes he's only good or she's only good when someone takes care of them. Mm-hmm. The two connect, and they're both getting their needs met. So what we have is this mutual dysfunctional relationship. Within that, the narcissist manipulates mm-hmm. And hurts the codependent because everything has to be about them, and they don't reciprocate or try to come close to matching what the codependent does. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the codependent gets hurt, and, yes, they're fooled, they're lied to, they're manipulated, and sometimes really horrible things are done to them. But the reason it's important for me to say to those who are listening to this podcast that don't look at your – if you identify yourself as a codependent, is don't look at yourself as a victim.
Or powerless.
Powerless, yeah. Because you can't solve the problem, because it's the attraction that the feeling of familiarity, the strength of the attraction that keeps driving you to the narcissist. That's the problem, because you can finally get strong enough and say no and set boundaries to one narcissist. But 2 months, 3 months later, maybe even a week later, mm-hmm. you'll find yourself in the arms of another narcissist.
If you don't go heal the wounds.
Exactly.
I see.
And so that's why I'm really cautious about blaming the narcissist, although I can speak for hours about the nasty narcissist that had been in my life, which
sure.
I won't.
Right. No, but that's the beauty of being an author. You can write about it.
Right.
But the other thing, too, is that you're writing and healing others through your experiences. But some people listening might say, what's the big whoop? I've found somebody who gets me. The he's found somebody that gets me. So what if we're, quote, narcissistic or, quote, codependent? We've got our rhythm, and it's fine. Why is it dysfunctional? And what would you say to those people?
Well, first of all, if that person was in – that sounds like the vocabulary of a narcissist.
Okay.
Because or the codependent who's under duress or is coerced.
Too afraid to leave. Right.
Right, because the codependents are suffering all the time. They suffer after the explosion of what I call the love cloud in mm-hmm. a relationship that lasts anywhere from a week to a year. They go into the mode of being hurt, marginalized, lonely, and sad. And the only person and the only codependent that has said something like that, you said, what the whoop, mm-hmm. Is the one that is so afraid of telling the truth, because if they tell the truth, they'll have to be alone. There'll be so many consequences that they'll have to face about themselves and even their family members.
Why do you think so many people are afraid or think there's something wrong with being alone?
Well, I talk about pathological loneliness mm-hmm. is a condition that is like a withdrawal symptom.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm writing now, codependency is an addiction.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows a codependent, or if they are themselves, will tell you that when you leave someone who's harmful to you, but yet you love them, your rational mind will say leave and run, but give yourself a day or two. This feeling of loneliness and insecurity creeps in, mm-hmm. much like a withdrawal symptom does, and then the irrational thoughts come back mm-hmm. that no one will ever love me, I'll be always alone, I don't feel good in my own skin. That pathological loneliness, which this withdrawal symptom, is so strong mm-hmm. that it will draw back the smartest codependent codependent who has been in the longest amount of therapy, mm-hmm. which is why I'm writing my book, my second book, The Codependency Cure, is because the only way that codependency is going to be cured is by understanding the depth to which it's entrenched in your personality and your subconscious.
And so for the healing to begin and for you to dig into those deep, deep trenches, you talked about something that I think is incredibly important in self-love. Absolutely. So your self-love self-love deficiency disorder is what we're suffering from.
I have to tell you a little backstory on that.
Okay.
I've always disliked the term codependency. I think the term doesn't even mean anything. It actually is defined as the partner of someone who's chemically dependent, which was made up in the 1970s.
Okay.
And I don't like it for so many reasons. And so I told myself I have to come up with another name. And one day it hit me. And I literally almost jumped out of my chair. Mm-hmm. Self-love deficit disorder. It is, and I even get goosebumps when I tell this story, because it so perfectly explains the condition that all codependents experience.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't love yourself and you never learn to love yourself, that is ground zero. And that's the emotional condition that draws you, that creates the lack of self-esteem that draws mm-hmm. you into the net of the narcissist.
Right.
Through therapy and through healing, we go from self-love deficit to self-love abundance, and that is when the codependency naturally begins to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can, through the work, the various ways we can solve codependency in therapy, we can solve that. We're essentially teaching people to love themselves, because if you love yourself, And it's healthy self-love, not delusional, like narcissistic
right,
self-love.
Right, exactly, not narcissistic. There's a big
difference. You will never allow anyone to hurt you as badly as a narcissist.
Mm.
So I don't have to teach people to run or stay away from narcissists, because people don't respond to that as much as learning to love themselves, so it naturally and reflexively changes their life.
So why do people have such a problem with that term self-love? Because it seems like grandiose, right? I love myself. But it's really not. It's taking care of yourself. Because as Carolyn Mace, author of Anatomy of the Spirit, Sacred Contracts, she says it's not self-ish. Or it's self-first, not self-ish. And by putting yourself first, you're a better parent, a better coworker. You're putting on your oxygen mask before the plane goes down and you have to help your small child. And so if we could get, I guess, that distortion out of our head, right? That there's a deficit. I mean, there's a disorder happening here of self-love. And so for somebody who grew up in a childhood, like let's just say I have a friend whose father was incredibly abusive, and he unfortunately was, I mean, we're talking locked in closets, not fed, damage. Mm-hmm. So this kid wasn't loved much, you know, in the family. But how is he going to teach himself to love himself? You know, when someone is so damaged from a childhood of chaos, what is their go-to? I mean, they think, oh, well, it's just to find someone who loves me and then I'm good. But what if there isn't anybody there? Then what do they do?
Well, first of all, the person who has self-love deficit disorder, now SLD, which is formerly codependency, but the codependent person, they suffer from pathological loneliness, which goes deeper to other more fundamental psychological conditions. So in order to explain this, I created the SLDD or codependent pyramid to explain the origins of codependency simplistically.
Okay.
So if we want to understand codependency or self-love deficit disorder, we have to understand that as being at the top of the pyramid.
Okay.
At the base of the pyramid is attachment trauma, which is the person, all codependents have been raised, and I say this, all codependents, and I've had very few people to convince me otherwise, and I'd had many narcissists who tried to,
yeah, sure.
And yelled while they were doing it.
Yeah, of course.
But every codependent can identify with having a parent with extreme narcissistic qualities. Mm-hmm. During the formative years of their childhood, they didn't get the bonding and the attachment that every healthy child needs. So attachment trauma is the condition that adult codependents experience as children during these formative years because of their narcissistic parent. Going up the pyramid, the next level would be core shame. So as a result of attachment trauma, their
shame.
Core personality is that I am not good, because shame is about who you are, not what you do. I am not good, and unless I do something to make other people happy. Which is what you learn during your attachment process.
Mm-hmm.
From the core of shame is this pervasive feeling of pathological loneliness. I will always be lonely unless somehow someone could love me, and despite my shame.
Right.
In order to, the next level of the pyramid is codependency addiction. In order to get rid of this
sadness.
Core shame, the sadness, the loneliness, it's almost like you need something to preoccupy you, self-medicate you, distract you. And it's the relationship with the narcissist that always keeps you on the hamster wheel of trying to get something that's never there, trying to fix something that can never be fixed. And like an addiction, it gains control over your life. And then from there, we have at the very top of the pyramid codependency.
Mm-hmm.
So to your question, what do? Is we have to understand codependency is the symptoms that come from attachment trauma, and that requires the type of psychotherapy or healing journey that can get to the core. Because if you can't fix that or heal that, your human magnet is always going to find the narcissist more familiar and paradoxically safer. And I say paradoxically.
So as a therapist, in your line of work and what you do, Has anyone sat down with you where you said, you know what, I think I know a better therapist for you because they specialize in blah, you know, or have people sent you people because they know you specialized in all of this? I mean, truly, because, and I believe I interviewed you for this for the Chicago Tribune for a column about finding the right therapist. Because if you don't find one that's a fit, you just give up on the whole thing. But you have to shop around for a good therapist. This is really important.
Yes, I'm laughing because I get hundreds of requests, and I very rarely take new clients because what I talk about is brand new thinking, and other therapists aren't familiar with. Because of that, you know, I wrote a book and I do trainings, which are available, and we can talk about that at the end of the our discussion.
On your website, you can get all this information.
On my website, and we'll give that at the end of the podcast. But and also, I'm now creating an institute to teach other therapists, which is in its infancy, because these ideas, which seem so common sense to me and anyone else I explain them to, are actually really complicated to put into practice because most psychotherapists started off as codependent. and if you are and
you don't want to look at your own shit, sorry, but it's true, right?
If you don't look at your own shit, you can, or if you don't see your own shit, then you can't see the stuff in others.
Yeah, right.
and so that's what I'm trying to do by telling people my story and teaching them that, you know, we could only see what we've solved in ourselves. Mm-hmm. So to the answer to your question, and sorry for the long answer, is that the best therapist is the one that has done their own work, that understands, and I'm not saying this to promote my book, but understands the human magnet syndrome, understands that codependency or self-love deficit disorder is, using the pyramid, is a result of trauma, shame, and addiction. So if you can find a therapist that gets that, and there are plenty that do, then you can put the pieces together, and you don't need Ross's way of doing it. You just need someone who can solve the problem by knowing what the problem is.
So when you explained what brings a codependent, right? For those who don't know, I mean, narcissist is another one of those terms that we're throwing around like salt and pepper. Explain what causes a narcissist.
Absolutely. In fact, I have to plug, sometime in October, and I can't remember the date, I'm doing a six-hour seminar in Chicago on narcissism. But narcissism, I call it pathological narcissism because there's a range of narcissistic personality types. And the types that I talk mostly about are the ones that are very, very hurtful, that do not have any idea that they are being hurtful and have very little motivation to change.
Because they're so charming, they're always told they're charming. A lot of them are charming anyway.
Well, they're charming.
They can
be. But they don't change because they're broken.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very strong word that sometimes gets me in trouble among my colleagues, but as we understand that the codependent is the way they are because of their attachment trauma, imagine attachment trauma that's 2, 3, 4 times as worse for the child who became a narcissist. So during their developmental years, the attachment was non-existent. They did not learn a way to get love by being nice, kind, giving. They didn't get anything. And so they were so deprived as a child from the important emotional nurturing necessities that they grew, that the parts of their personality that teach us about empathy and kindness and sensitivity, not only did they didn't learn it, they learned the opposite, that the only way that they'll ever be loved is by loving yourself and expecting that no one else will do it.
Got it. Is it possible that the opposite also is true? I mean, I've known a lot of narcissists that were just coddled from day one and think that they're perfect because they were told by their parents that they're perfect.
Absolutely.
So there was that, like, the over-coddled and the over-neglected seemed to be narcissistic. Am I correct?
Oh, you're right. And that's why in my continuum of self theory, which is in my book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, talks about the ranges of narcissism.
Right.
But the type of narcissist that you're talking about is the overindulged narcissist. I would say that they similarly experience attachment trauma.
Right.
When your parent lives through you and enjoys life and expects you to make them feel good, which is the glue that keeps the child and the mother enmeshed, it impacts drastically the developmental sequences mm-hmm. that create healthy psychological people, mm-hmm. that where you learn to be independent, autonomous. So the child who was coddled and who was given everything might not know it. You know, they're also were severely damaged because the fact that they're not aware that the way they are, that's harmful and hurtful, and that they are in relationships that display their narcissistic qualities, mm-hmm. they're still narcissistic and hurtful and dysfunctional. But the reason they are is not because of a negative experience in childhood, but an overindulging.
Right.
But if you could get into the mind of that person when they were a child, I promise you, at the moment that they were being overindulged, they were not happy. They didn't feel comfortable, mm-hmm. and they knew that something was wrong.
So it all comes down to something missing for everyone.
Absolutely.
Whether it's the codependent or the narcissist, something's missing.
It's absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's the trauma of the attachment experience. I mean, mm-hmm. we know this in monkeys. You raise a monkey without a loving, nurturing parent. They grow up with behavior problems and don't nurture their children.
Right.
So if you have a human child,
yeah.
and you are the narcissist who hurts your child one way or the other through the attachment process, it's going to play out.
Yeah, look out.
That's why in families, if there's a codependent and there's a lot of siblings, you can almost always bet, and invariably this is true, there's also a narcissist. Because there's one child that figured out how to be daddy or mommy's special little girl or special little boy, mm-hmm. somehow to figure out how to get the love and be the pleasing child, the trophy child. But the other one didn't, and mm-hmm. that's the bad seed. And so we see that these constellations of these narcissists and codependents come from these families in which there were a narcissist father or mother or mm-hmm. codependent mother.
So I have a friend who has this dance that she does with she's the codependent and the narcissist, but it's with her brother. So this doesn't always have to be with our spouses or significant others. This can be within a family dynamic.
Oh, yeah, I mean, codependent's codependent.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is if you are a codependent, and again, I want to say self-love deficit disorder, but
right.
I'm not going to beat my drum too loud on this on this show. But if you're codependent, you're the way that you treat everyone is impacted by this disorder.
Mm-hmm.
It plays out more intensely and more uncontrollably when you're in an intimate relationship, because that is when you let your guard down, and just by the nature, the human nature of intimate, mm-hmm. long-term relationship. But it also plays out in other intimate relationships, whether it's brother, sister, mm-hmm. and I know this from my own family, boss,
right.
Friends. But there are some people that can, and you think of a controlled alcoholic, you know, right. they go to work and they're fine by day and go home and they drink themselves into oblivion.
Yep.
Well, codependency, like an addiction, is like that too. You can like go home and be a manager and be have fairly good boundaries and then go home and then be the passive, docile
right.
Rug mm-hmm. that upon which you're stepped on and beaten up. So actually, I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Well,
I think
no,
I lost
true.
Myself
no,
on that
you,
one.
You're right. So here's the deal. She has a brother
yes.
who is a total narcissist, and he does nothing for their mother. And she is, you know, a full-time mom, full-time working, you know, has deals with her husband. And then she takes on all the deal, everything with their mother, right? And all she does is complain about it. And, oh, it's just the way he is, though. I can't change it. So, again, he's being coddled, too.
Right.
And he was the kid that could do no wrong.
Right.
She was the one always fixing and you know, cleaning up everyone's mess. And so she got rewarded by how much she did, how she planned the party, how she cooked at Thanksgiving, how she cleaned the table, how she handled the insurance. I mean, everything that her value in her family system is based on what she does for everybody else.
It's a perfect parallel of her childhood that's mm-hmm. still being played out, that as long as she keeps herself connected in that role,
mm-hmm.
It will be like that until her mother passes, and then her brother will carry that on mm-hmm. because she is playing this role. And codependents are not, and I created two categories of codependency.
Mm-hmm.
One is active and one is passive. Most people think of codependents as these passive Edith Bunker types
mm-hmm.
that will just, the salt of the earth.
Right.
But most codependents are always trying to change people. They can be manipulative and pushy and kind of dodgy.
Mm-hmm.
And some are sweet and honest. So the point they have is that you learn to, that the only way that you're going to get anything is to try to keep getting someone and hounding someone to do something. And this is the codependency trap. They're in this role with people that won't give them anything unless they really fight for it.
Right.
And when they get it, they feel like they really scored. Mm-hmm. So this friend of yours learned this as a child,
right,
that the love that really matters is the crumbs that she gets from her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say to my clients, don't mistake a handful of breadcrumbs from a piece of bread.
Yeah.
Because if you, all your life you all you got was breadcrumbs, you're happy about that.
Yeah, and that's enough, but yet you're still always hungry.
Exactly.
Always,
exactly.
Right? So when I was going through my divorce, I think I shared this story with you privately, but I'll share it with our listeners. I was, you know, you go through a bunch of different phases, but it was just right before it was going to be finalized, and I was having a sad night, you know, one of those go through the photo albums with too much Pinot Noir night.
Oh, yes.
And so I remember... probably in the third drink in, I was about to go and pour it, which is a terrible idea because after two, I'm pretty useless. So after three, it would have been really messy. And I heard really loud and clear, love yourself, don't leave yourself.
Right.
And it was just like, wait, what? Now I'm hearing voices? I have drunk too much. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, love yourself, don't leave yourself. And that is sort of the core of all of this.
Everything.
We're trying to leave ourselves because it hurts. Where we are right now is hot potato. Woo, get me out of here. This is painful. So I'm going to medicate, whether it's with food or with sex or with drugs or with shopping or with Pinot Noir or, you know, Snickers. You medicate to soothe, but the real medicine is self-love.
Exactly.
So for you and your practice, Ross, how do you get that one home? I mean, what can our listeners start doing tomorrow, today, on the drive home? What can they do to get that, you know, motivation going to self-love?
It's interesting. When I first came up with the term self-love, self-love deficit disorder, every person that was connected to me, whether it's Facebook, my clients, YouTube, mm-hmm. It just immediately resonated.
Right.
So it's the problem is the mirror. We look in the mirror and we see someone that we accept as ourself, mm-hmm. but it's not really. We're identifying with this codependent as who we really are. This codependent part of ourselves is really the manifestation of a hurt child that is trying so hard to be loved mm-hmm. and picking the wrong people. That is the hurt, sad, lonely person you see in the mirror.
Right.
The person behind that that you never got a chance to look at is the self-loving person that is just ready to burst out. That like any child, if they just had everything right.
Mm-hmm.
So I say what you do today is understand that if you do have self-love deficit disorder and identify with codependency, mm-hmm. is to look in the mirror and look beneath the loneliness and try to start to see the person that either does love herself or love himself, but can love himself and love herself. And every day, in every way, do just one little thing more that you would do just for you, despite what anyone else would say or think.
That's a good one. You know, I had an exercise that a good therapist, because we've talked about this candidly. I've had some real crappy therapists.
Oh, me too.
People don't know. You're like, oh, but they must know. They're the expert. But, you know, they're just sitting there nodding going, and how did that make you feel? I feel like I want to run out of this office. That's what it makes me feel. But this one really good therapist said, you know, a lot of my wounds and trauma come from my 4-year-old self that was sort of lost in the shuffle when my parents were getting divorced. And they got divorced, and then they started dating again, which got really confusing because we were going up to the Dells with the guy my mom was calling that a-hole. You know, you're like, wait, what? So there was all this, like, switching gears of how do I feel and what am I supposed to do in front of mom and dad, and am I okay with this? That little 4-year-old girl also would go to school sometimes without lunch. She was, you know, she was just tired and exhausted. So what my therapist said, she suggested that I give that little girl a spa day. And I write about this in Stay Tuned, my first book. That I picture the two of us, and this is a meditation I do quite often when I'm feeling sad, is I will be there with my 4-year-old self.
Right.
And we go to the Four Seasons, and we get massages, and we, you know, like one of the things that I always remember as feeling nurtured when my mom was really present with me, because mm-hmm. she was busy trying to get her career going and marriages and all these things, trying to figure it out. when she would blow dry my hair, Ross,
right.
that was her being present, and I felt there was touch involved. It felt nurturing. She was trying to make her little girl pretty. It didn't happen often, but when she did that, it right. really had an impact on me. So I try to do that to my four-year-old little girl.
Right.
Comb her hair, do her hair. We go to have a spa day. And just that little meditation of a minute 30 thinking right. about that, literally, I think it changes my whole, like my pulse. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. The act of self-love is so foreign mm-hmm. to codependents. They have to fight the reflex that they're being selfish.
Yeah.
They're being needy because they grew up their whole life being told anytime they wanted something, there either was a consequence or they were criticized for it. So we're not going – it's not – and some people say, just tell me what to do. And mm-hmm. it's not so much what to do is to break the brainwashing that you are this unworthy, shameful person. And the way to change it is to start loving yourself the way that you always should have been loved, that you're waiting for someone else to love you.
Yeah.
Because you're waiting and then you're picking the narcissist. Mm-hmm. And until you solve that wound that keeps compelling you to the familiar but harmful, you have to actually heal the wound. And with the wound healed, as I say, the human magnet syndrome changes. And all of a sudden with self-love, you are attracted to other self-loving people.
Right.
Because the narcissist and the codependent are it's like I say, in a relationship math, they're like mm-hmm. two incomplete or half people that need each other to feel complete.
Right. So they're limping along, leaning together instead of standing tall next to each other.
I love it. You and I like do this metaphorical thing here.
What you're saying. It's like they're totally leaning in, and then they're one of them is each leg, right?
Actually, I had that vision as you were talking about that. You're
Have
great.
You ever seen a narcissist transform and become a really nice person?
it's funny because I recognize my weaknesses, and mm-hmm. I don't work with narcissists.
Yeah.
I do have staff that work for me that do. There are therapies that can really transform someone who has narcissistic personality disorder or borderline personality disorder for that mm-hmm. matter. But they're long-term therapies that take a while. And the problem is that most pathological narcissists don't think they have a problem. And as soon as their therapist challenges them, they bolt.
Right.
I've heard of stories. I know of therapists that specialize in it. We just don't see much of it because the empathy factor that is absent in a narcissist that's actually hard to build is required to keep them in therapy.
Right.
And most of them go to therapy because they're in trouble or they don't want to lose someone.
Sure.
And as soon as they manipulate the codependent back into believing that their act of contrition yeah. was enough, they go right back to it.
So I have a friend who's a codependent or an SLD, and she's married to a narcissist, and they were getting divorced, and they were in couples therapy, and the narcissist charmed the pants off of that therapist, and the therapist started going to my friend saying, hey, really, this is he's wonderful. What is wrong with you? You know, that whole dance goes down. Wow.
I've seen that so many times where someone will say, oh, my wife, who's a narcissist, is in therapy for 10 years, mm-hmm. and call me judgmental. But anyone who is a pathological narcissist who qualifies for the diagnosis narcissistic personality disorder, right. They show such obvious signs of the disorder. Mm-hmm. If you are yourself on the narcissistic side and somehow you sneaked into the psychotherapy field, and that does happen, that's what mm-hmm. we call covert narcissist, you are going to find the narcissist is really charming and you're going to really enjoy your weekly chats, and the therapy are always going to be chats about how the world is not treating the narcissist, and that's what you're going to call therapy.
Uh-huh.
But if you're come from a codependent background, that pathological narcissist is probably going to trigger you and really challenge you.
So a covert narcissist, that's something like Dr. Phil, right? He pretends he's fixing the world, but really it's all about him. I love you, Phil, but I'm just saying, like, would that be considered a covert narcissist?
I have on my YouTube channel, which has, I think, almost 4 million views, and I recommend anyone listening to this to check it out. Just type in Ross Rosenberg. My second most viewed video, or actually two of my second most viewed videos, which is almost 500,000 views, are on covert narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
So covert narcissists are narcissists that are conscious of their they're conscious of their narcissism and pretend to be codependent or altruistic people.
Mm-hmm.
And they put on the show so well because they know that's how they gain their narcissistic gold or narcissistic riches. Mm-hmm. But behind the scenes, they're nasty narcissists. So whether Dr. Phil or anyone else is, they're all over the place, and they put on the show so well because that makes them feel good about themselves.
Right.
But anyone, and I've heard stories from famous covert narcissists who say, well, I've been on his show, and as soon as the lights were off, or her show, I was a nobody.
Right.
I was nothing. But when the lights were on, that person had a beaming smile that radiated love and kindness.
Right. And, you know, that just goes to show all of us have the wounds, right? So even mm-hmm. those people that are in the self-help world, and I know a lot of authors in the self-help world, same sure. thing. Like one of, and I'm not going to say a name, but, you know, a New York Times bestselling author, it, like, has just unbelievable following, and she had like a writer that required a certain kind of M&Ms in the green room and all these things, and you're like, really?
I heard that.
you're healing people because of your polka dot M&Ms? Is that how it works? It's just crazy to me.
Oh, the covert narcissists are all over the place. Yeah. I did a video. It says when you unmask, and this was like 2.5 months ago, when you unmask a covert narcissist, run mm-hmm. and quietly. And I also wrote an article about it on the Huffington Post. But the whole idea that it became so popular, I think 120,000 views in 60 days, is because there are so many people out there that are afraid to say that this wonderful, lovable person that everyone admires is this horrible narcissist that hurts them mm-hmm. because they live in this double bind that no one will believe them. And I say, don't do what other people tell you. Set boundaries and just say no. Is get the F out of there mm-hmm. and don't say anything.
Right.
Because if you try to unmask a covert narcissist and you take away the only thing that they know about, they will fight you and hurt you with every ounce of energy, money, mm-hmm. and power they have, because that's all they have.
Right.
And so the conventional wisdom is stand tall and fight back. Won't work. And mm-hmm. I say, just get the heck out of there.
Cut your losses and bail.
Cut your losses and understand mm-hmm. that they will one day stew in their own juices, or they are currently. Because every narcissist knows they're a narcissist in some manner and suffers in some manner. Not mm-hmm. that we should necessarily feel sorry for them.
No, exactly.
Some do, though.
Well, some do. And thus the human magnet syndrome continues. The human magnet syndrome, I highly recommend that book. Also, a second edition coming. Eventually, you know, you're writing all the time. And then what's the other book you're working on right now?
Yeah, I'm actually working on a book now called The Codependency Cure, mm-hmm. Recovering from Self-Love Deficit Disorder.
Okay.
The second edition, which is actually available in Spanish and French.
Fantastic.
And I'm not allowed by law to mention an English version for another year and a half.
Got it.
So we didn't mention that, did we?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
But my YouTube channel, go to YouTube, type in Ross Rosenberg, spelled B-E-R-G. You'll see my channel. Mm-hmm. Or go to Advanced Clinical Trainers. That's advancedclinicaltrainers.com. And all my trainings are there. And last plug is I have a counseling center with 10 counselors, 5 of whom are trained in my methods. So if you are in the Chicago area and you are looking for some help with codependency, I might not be able to help you directly, but indirectly through supervision and teaching, we might be able to help you. And that's Clinical Care Consultants in Arlington Heights and Inverness, Illinois.
Clinical Care Consultants, if any of this resonates for you, you think you might have some sort of dance going on with a narcissist, or if you have self-love deficiency disorder, we want to get you hugging yourself. So get on the bandwagon. Ross Rosenberg, B-E-R-G, mind you. And definitely subscribe to the YouTube and watch that covert narcissist video, because I remember when I shared that when I first met you, well, re-met you when I was interviewing you for the Chicago Tribune, I must have shared that with 15 people. A lot of them in my family. And we were all like, really? Do you think is one of them? Yeah, you think so? Everybody will be able to relate to that. And a lot of that's why I love your writing, because it's very tangible and very relatable, but also very helpful.
Thank you.
So thank you for doing what you do, and keep writing. And when the next book comes out, we'll have another conversation. Sound good?
Thank you so much. And I appreciate so much for you inviting me to your podcast.
It's always, always good to chat with you, Ross. Ross Rosenberg, author, therapist, and overall cool dude. Michael Heidemann, thank you for all of your help. Stay spiritual, everybody. I'm Spiritual Dammit on WGN+, and I'm Jennifer Weigel. We'll see you next time.